Good morning and welcome to Bodies and Souls, the space in which you hear authentic conversations from real Jewish women talking about topics that are relevant to you. You're going to walk away from our conversation today inspired, connected, and feeling uplifted. Today we have Malki Janowski with us. Malki is going to talk to us about getting ready for the Seder, what Pesach prep looks like, whether you have teens or children, how to not feel stretched or stressed, and really how do we come to the table not feeling absolutely at our capacity emotionally, physically, and even spiritually. We're going to kind of meander through this conversation because Malki and I are old friends, and we're going to bring you into our conversation and our journey to get to where we are today. And hopefully you're going to enjoy your Pesach preps just a little bit more. So without further ado, here is Malki. Good morning and welcome to Bodies and Souls. Your host for today is Rivki Boyarsky. So I actually have a very good, very old, we just discussed how old we are, friend Malki Janowski here with me all the way from Florida. So for those of you who don't know Malki, Malki is on Shlichus in Coral Springs and she is the principal of the high school there. Malki, before we start, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I think you just summed it up in a nutshell. I grew up on Shlichus here and was very happy and privileged to be able to move back here on Shlichus. I'm the principal of Vorobeskaya Academy, which is a Lubavitch girls high school. I love my role as a mechanechas and as a wife, as a mother, as a shlucha. And you were asking before, or you mentioned before, things you're passionate about. I'm passionate about all those things.
So I love that. And that's basically what we do here is talk to women about what they're passionate about. So Purim's behind us and we're heading towards Pesach. In a lot of homes, that means that we are entering like the stressful time of the year where, you know, there's panic and, you know, some people, you know, might have even like a different set of clothes that their toddlers are wearing in the kitchen. And, you know, like there's this whole like panic. It happens to be that Pesach is one of my favorite holidays. And I think it's one of my favorite Yom Tovim really because it's in the spring. And I'm like, I become like, as I age, I've become like a flower that wilts. I mean, you don't know this in Florida, but those of us in the Northeast, we wilt every single winter and then we like come back to life every spring. So I think there's a part of it that's that. But also like Pesach was never this hugely stressful thing when I was growing up. So I think where I'd like this conversation to begin is with the stress of what, you know, a lot of homes go through in preparation for Pesach.
So you mentioned that Pesach was not stressful for you growing up, me as well. I do think something that I always, I've come to realize this as an adult, is that my mother loved Yom Tov and I love Yom Tov. And I really feel that I got that from her. And I, you know, looking back, she had so much to do. Yom Tov was, if you want to think of it this way, such a physical burden on her as it is for many of us as Jewish women. She just never portrayed that. She always spoke about Yom Tov with joy. She, you know, would be excited about cooking whatever different foods, especially if, you know, they were individual to each Yom Tov. And I took that as it is in my hands also to transmit that feeling about Yom Tov, that if I, as the mother, transmit like a stressed sense, or, you know, just feelings of like, this is so hard, we have to do this every year, then that would be terrible. I'm cheating my children out of the joy of Yom Tov. So I really, that's something I try very consciously to be open about, how much I love Yom Tov, how excited I am. I think that is so important to share the joy. Yom Tov is, Baruch Hashem, we're so lucky to have all these days in our lives and a calendar that has these seasons where there's amazing things going on. Especially, by the way, if you look at Chassidus, Yom Tov is so much more than a day. Like there's an actual season. You mentioned the seasons, which we don't have so much of in Florida. We have like really hot and not so hot. That's pretty much it. But when you talk about seasons, when it's winter or winter starts coming and you start pulling out your winter clothes and the sweaters and you turn on the heat, you're like living with the time. And then when spring starts and there's that rebirth and you can stop wearing the heavy coat and you're just wearing the jacket, you know, and you turn off the heaters and you open your windows, you're living with the time. So the Yom Tovim and Chassidus are seasons where there is a reality going on. And it's so easy to get lost in the physical tasks, especially if you don't particularly enjoy it. But if we can keep in mind, there's a world of revelation, of kaychais, of amazing spiritual energy going on. It's just we live life on an entirely different plane. It's really an amazing thing. So I think we should approach Pesach with joy. That's in a nutshell.
So I have two thoughts. First of all, as you were talking, you're like, oh, I also didn't grow up with the stress. I'm thinking, like, even the example I gave, my mother, when we were toddlers, she would like literally wipe us down as we were leaving, but it wasn't stressful. It was so funny and it was so fun. And I think that that's the part, like, you might be doing all those things that cause someone else stress, but it was like, it was almost like a game. So I think it's the attitude that's so important that yes, you could be like literally wiping down the windows on both sides and doing your spring cleaning with your Pesach, but it's the mindset and the attitude that really is what you're saying is the difference. So I think that's very important.
It's funny that you're saying that. Last night, I told my kids at supper, okay, we're in Pesach mode, guys. That means what do we do before we leave the table? And they all know it already. We do the Pesach dance. The Pesach dance is before you leave the table, you like shake yourself off. And when the kids were little, we just did a whole dance out of it. So they all, when they finished eating, like they got up, they took my baby who does not exactly walk yet. She's like just sort of figuring it out. And they're like made a circle and they started dancing. I videoed it because it was so cute. But they were so happy to do this, you know, brush off the crumbs. And yes, it could be so stressful if you're like stressed about it. Oh my goodness, cheering stuck to your foot. Or it can be this like big game and thing where we do a face-off dance.
It's so funny how those examples just align so perfectly. So I want to go back to another thing you said. You said seasons, right? You said it's a whole season and there's Chassidus behind the meaning of the season. So what is Pesach all about? Like what's the season and the, you know, the flavor to the time that we're in?
So Pesach Beruchnius is about Yetzias Mitzrayim, leaving your omits, which are our boundaries. There are boundaries that are self-imposed. You know, we think we can only accomplish X. We can't do Y and Z. We think that we're not good enough for whatever other possibilities there might be in life. There are boundaries that are externally imposed. And the idea of Pesach is that we're just like the Yidden left Mitzrayim. They were able to break boundaries that were really not breakable. You couldn't leave Mitzrayim. But they did, that we're really able to step out of that and we can do things that we didn't think that we could do.
So the season of spring is breaking out of the boundaries of winter and going into a new reality, like a rebirth of who we are and what we think we're capable of.
Yes.
Okay. I love that. And I feel like maybe we need to give our kids, you know, this energy every once in a while. So maybe this would be like the perfect time to be like, okay, you guys, we can do this. We can get into a new space of being. So let's talk a little bit on the physical side, because we've just kind of touched on the spirituality of it. Planning for Pesach. So how does a mother, and I think that this is actually unique to our particular age, mine and yours, where we have older kids and little kids, and we're kind of straddling this, you know, different space. So I want to break it down into two parts. So I want to kind of speak to our younger moms first and then speak to the people who are more our age. And I remember as a younger mom, like doing Pesach was a lot of details, right? There was a lot of just, we're putting one foot in front of the other and we're just getting through the day. So I want to talk about how do we make Pesach enjoyable and doable when you have maybe three kids under the age of four or a lot of little kids in the house. And I'm sure you remember this as well as I do, that it is a whole to do when they're all really little and you don't even have extra hands to help around. It's just a lot of extra people.
Yeah, it is hard. I think that, first of all, just acknowledging that this is a part of, I guess, the journey that we have as Jewish women. And there's like a sisterhood here. You'll always find somebody to commiserate with you. Find another mom who is in more or less the same stage and same boat and have like a good, you know, kvetch fest together intentionally and enjoy it. And then if that is for some people, it doesn't help. But if that's energizing for you, then go for it. But do it with the mindset of like laughing at yourself versus actually like wallowing in the difficulty. You know, it's a funny story, and tell yourself you're going to look back in 5 years or 10 years, however long it is, and laugh. Take pictures. You know, if your kids smear diaper cream all over the wall and that stuff is so hard to get off, or, you know, empty a dozen eggs onto the floor, whatever it is they've gotten up to, you will laugh about it one day. And if you could just kind of channel that and laugh right now and take a picture, because you want to have evidence when you laugh about it one day, or when you show them when they're 16, like, remember that? And you can kind of tap into a later energy and adopt it. Now, say, that's really funny. Also very difficult, but really funny. I also think that it's just helpful to bear in mind our own, what is our own capacity? Do what you could do. Just like a small example, one thing that I find important to make, but time consuming to make, is Pesach lakshin, like those very, very thin egg noodles. I just make it with plain eggs. It takes a lot of time. And I have memories of watching my grandmother do it. And I was like entranced, like she would pick it up with her bare fingers and flip it over. And I wanted to do it, but it's a pretty time consuming thing. And it involves standing for a lot of time over the stove. When my kids were small, I didn't make them because I just didn't have time. And now they're bigger. And if they're able to help more, I do have time to make them. And that's okay. You know, when you can do it, you can do it. And when you can't do it, you can't do it. So the just recognizing like what makes sense for me now, I feel like is a very important thing. And keeping a sense of equilibrium and proportion. And, you know, it's not the end of the world if XYZ happens. And a sense of humor is so important. That will carry you through a lot of things. That's the young stage.
So funny that you mentioned this idea of taking pictures. I remember when I had three little ones, I was pregnant and they were quiet one morning. I slept in, Malki. I slept in, and I remember turning to my husband and being like, it's Pesach vacation. All the kids are off playgroup, but we slept in. That's amazing. And I got up and my two boys were in my daughter's crib with every single cracker from the pantry smashed up, dancing on it. Like I had Pesach cleaned everything. Like I was ready to like turn over the kitchen, and I now had crumbs everywhere. And I remember, I have a picture, like my kids know this picture, it is so funny, but in that moment it was so not funny. But I also want to bring up another point other than like laughing, which I could do now. I don't think I quite got there in the moment. I also want to really bring up to people, and I know that this is an expensive thing to share, but if you can invest in some sort of help, or if somebody is going to gift you something for Pesach, and, you know, instead of a piece of jewelry or instead of flowers, you know, maybe using that towards help. And that could look at like a high school kid who's going to take your kids to the park for an hour or two so that you can take a nap. No, I'm not going to say clean, take a nap, so that you can just read, so that you can do something, so that when your kids are around and you're, you know, back to yourself, because there is a lot of time during Pesach. And Pesach vacation, by the way, I think it's our biggest vacation on the Jewish school calendar. And you have a lot of time with your kids. So it's okay if, you know, you're curtains are not Pesach cleaned. I didn't even know that was a thing until the Satmar guy who does my curtains is like, call me back for Pesach. I was like, why am I calling you back for Pesach? So it's okay. When your kids are little, I just want to add to Malki, like your house does not have to be perfectly Pesach cleaned. Dirt is not chametz stick. Your diaper cream might be, but dirt is not chametz stick. And really just hire as much help as you can, and just one step in front of the other. Then your kids kind of get older and you kind of straddle this space where like your kids are able to help, but guess what? They no longer want to help. So I want to talk a little bit about teenagers. How are we motivating our teens or our preteens to really get in on the process? And it's their vacation. Like they work hard all year. They want their time off. And on a certain level, I think as mothers, we want them to have the time off as well, like for their mental health and just for themselves. Like we don't want to overburden our children. So I guess there's two parts to this. How much are we supposed to expect of our teens and preteens? And how do we get them to want to be involved? And does it matter if they want to be involved?
Right. I wouldn't go with the starting point of how do we get them to want to be involved. I think that I believe this about children in general, that one of the ways of instilling responsibility in them is that they help in the household from when they're very, very small. I feel that that is actually of crucial importance, that kids help around the household, that they have chores, that they also learn to take personal ownership. You know, you ate, go put your plate in the sink when you're done. That kind of thing, where little children, after you take a bath, go put your clothes in the hamper. Don't just leave it on the floor. It's really, really important to instill those traits in them. It's not just about them helping you. Primarily, it's about them being responsible human beings. And I tell my daughters, especially my older daughters, when you have households of your own, I want you to know how to do it. It's my job to make sure you know how to cook. It's my job to make sure you know how to do laundry, how to run a home. And same thing with my boys, by the way. They need to have these skills. These are life skills that people should have. And my girls will tell me sometimes, like, you know, my friend's mother doesn't let her help out in the kitchen, and I feel so bad for her. Like, she's going to get married and she's not going to know how to cook. And I agree. Why should a girl get married and not know how to cook? But you know what? What's she going to do? Like, when you're adjusting to a new husband is not when you want to be figuring out how to make rice for supper. So I think that is just an attitude and an approach to openly communicate this with your children, that you are going to be a much more capable adult if you learn how to do these things now. As far as Pesach, so or any Yom Tov really, Pesach though is obviously the most labor intensive. If we communicate a sense of joy about Yom Tov, then hopefully we are looking at the preparation to that time as joyful as well. And I also think that part of the beauty of the Jewish calendar is that there are different things at different times of year. So you only build a sukkah once a year. For kids who like to build, it's just so exciting. It's a novelty. And we only do it once. Like in my house, the kids who want to help build the sukkah want to help build a sukkah, and they're so excited. And it's like a treat because we only get to do it. It's not we only have to do it once a year, we only get to do it once a year. Pesach also is the only time we do this, you know, major spring cleaning situation. And I look forward to it because I don't necessarily love the cleaning, but I love the cleanliness. So it's great. Like, I'm glad I have, just from a purely physical and mundane perspective, I'm glad I have that time that makes me have that sort of structure in my life where, yes, we're going to do a proper cleaning. I love it. Like, we're going to get rid of all the garbage. It's going to be amazing. I think that is a big part of the overall approach. Actually, a few years ago, I don't remember exactly how long ago I started this, I decided to make a chart for Pesach cleaning. I had a big poster board. I made a calendar, a big calendar, basically for the month from Purim to Pesach. So it's like a large, large size hanging on the wall. And then I wrote down all of the different jobs that need to get done for Pesach cleaning on different post-it notes. And I tried to break it down as much as possible. You know, it's not like cleaning the living room. It's like the living room couch is one post-it note and the armchair is another one. And put out the post-it notes on different days of the calendar. And I originally started doing this to make it clearer to some of the kids who struggle a little bit more with executive functioning and planning, breaking down big projects. I want them to feel empowered to clean for Pesach, especially when they have their own homes, because it can be a big job. It is a big job. It can feel very, very overwhelming. And I don't want them to feel that way. I want them to feel that this, yes, it's a big job, but I know how to do it. I want them to feel confident embarking in Pesach cleaning. And if you're not so great at breaking down big jobs into little jobs, this is my chance to model it for them and to teach them. So I've done this for a few years. And this past year, Shushan Purim is usually when I start cleaning for Pesach. So yesterday, I said, okay, let's start cleaning. I'm going to do the freezer. Let's start going through your drawers, making sure there's no chametz in them. Just wasn't in the mood of making the chart. I felt like, whatever, you know, like, let's just clean. Like, we don't need the whole intro. And my kids made the chart for me. One of my daughters said, okay, I'm going to go make the chart now. So I said, sure, I came back in. All the kids are clustered around. They're decorating it. They wrote down all the jobs themselves on different post-it notes. They're giving me ideas about where I should put them. It was so amazing that they took that ownership. And I do see that they're empowered. Like, they know what has to get done. And they have opinions about what's the best time to do this and what's the best time to do that. And they were all happy and excited about it. And like, let's just be realistic. That doesn't mean they love every second of cleaning. That doesn't mean I don't have to remind them 100 times maybe to do the same job or sit there with them and walk them through it. But it's not a negative thing. It's a job that we do, but we can do it with a sense of happiness and looking forward to the Yom Tov that's coming.
I love that because it's such a sense of accomplishment for you as a mother that your kids were able to mimic what you've been doing. And it's such a nice thing because so much of motherhood is us doing it again and again and the kids not getting it. And then when you see it, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm doing something. That's amazing. We were talking a little bit about the calmness and the enjoyable and that it's, we want our kids to feel like it's a doable job, that it's a job that we feel good and we're not going to necessarily be overwhelmed. Can we talk a little bit about the mundane part of this job? It is mundane. It is doing one thing at a time, putting a foot in front of the other, cleaning this drawer, cleaning that drawer, doing this room, doing that room, doing this floor, doing that floor, checking things off our box. What about, I want to go back to the spirituality, which we kind of touched on the beginning, but what about the ruchnius part? Where is our role in this mundane job? Is there a spiritual component that we're supposed to connect to? And if so, what is that component?
I really believe, and this isn't only about Pesach, by the way, I think for any Jewish woman, life, it does often feel and is very, very mundane. There's, you know, you're making Shabbos every week. I always say if a firm woman wants a superiority complex, just like look at some of the literature in the secular world about Thanksgiving, and you're going to feel like a superhero because you are one and you pull this off every week. So there's a tremendous amount of doing the same tasks again. You know, you cook for Shabbos every week. You clean for Shabbos every week. There are a number of Yemen type of year. Baruch Hashem, they're beautiful. There's definitely a huge amount of mundane stuff. If you have a big family, you know, there's childcare is a never ending situation. And I think that we learn Chassidus so much about fusing Gashmius with Ruchnius. It's the whole subject, actually, of Tanya and Chitas, the last Kabbal Prakim. Specifically women, if you look at the way the Rebbe speaks to women, the Rebbe's letters to women, I see this very clearly, and I really feel it. This has been my experience, that all Yidden have the ability to infuse their physical lives and their physical stuff with spirituality. I think women have a unique ability to do this because we are so, or maybe Hashem gave us this ability because we're so grounded in the mundane world, because we have to be, you know, doing that laundry and changing the diapers and cooking supper every day and packing the backpacks, that we really have, I believe women have an extra ability to feel that fusion, to feel that the mundane tasks you're doing are holy. And I think it has a lot to do with mindset, that it can be easy to like sort of make yourself suffer and feel like, oh, I have to do this again. Like, I have to clean again and look at the mess the kids made again. Or you can open yourself up to saying and literally tell yourself, I'm doing something holy, that it's, you have to be open to it. You have to be willing to let yourself experience it. But I really believe women have a greater ability. So there's actually a beautiful teaching from Yitzhak of Berdichev, and I don't remember the exact words, but he says that cleaning that we do for Pesach, and he parallels it with the shofar that is blown on Rosh Hashanah. There, if you look on Rosh Hashanah, the kailais of the shofar are they're referred to by an abbreviation, Kufshin, Resh, and Kuf. It's Kia, Shvarim, Tzuruah, and Tkia. And he takes four Yiddish words. I don't remember all the words. One of them's in like the scratching, the scrubbing that start with those letters, Kufshin, Resh, and Kuf. And he says that the scrubbing and the cleaning and the scratching things out that women are doing are faced to clean their house, that is as powerful as the kailais of the shofar that we blow. That's an amazing thing. Tell yourself that when you're cleaning. I'm like blowing the shofar now. The impact, the spiritual impact of what I'm doing is huge. And all I have to do is scrub, you know, the cabinet, which is very, very doable. Maybe it's so fun, but when you consider the impact, wow, like look at what a gift that we have that we're able to do. So tell your kids. It's an amazing, amazing thing. Now, Arizal speaks very highly of efforts to get rid of chametz before Pesach, also to clean, and what that means on a spiritual level and what that does for your neshama. It's really an amazing opportunity that we have. So if we can open ourselves up to feeling the ruchnius, then we can experience this whole pre-Pesach thing on a very, very different plane.
So because I know Malki for a long time, I'm going to call you out on this a little. When Malki, I don't know if you remember this conversation, but I remember it so vividly because we had it for a while. So Malki and I have a group of friends that we've actually been in touch with almost daily, I want to say, since seminary, which is amazing. And I remember when we were all very young, new wives and mothers, I think almost all of us struggled with this concept. So first, I want to hold space for whoever's listening and they're like, oh, that's totally non-attainable. I don't feel the spirituality in the mundane. I mean, I actually feel this very, very deeply now in how the mundane parts of my life are really holy. And I see the positive spiritual effect on both myself and my children. I see the connection, but I think that you don't always naturally see it. And so this is the part, like, I know that I've struggled with this. I know Malki, like when we were all young mothers, and when our jobs went from, oh, we can open a sicha, we can open a mayamar every single day, we could like go to class, we can, you know, learn with each other. When we went into the mundane, I think there was a switch where we felt like we were less than, that we weren't doing these high ruchniyistika avaida, and we had lost a part of ourselves. So I think that these things, I just want to hold space for A, if you're not feeling up to the level that Malki is saying, and also understand that neither Malki nor myself, this wasn't natural. Like, it's not something that's, you know, that didn't take effort. And it does take effort to connect to the physicality and how the mundane is actually spiritual. So it takes time. It takes learning, and it takes also seeing the effects, seeing how if my kid is struggling spiritually, if I put more physical effort into what I'm doing and making sure my home is functional, making sure my home is beautiful and making sure I'm present and playing with Legos on the floor for 4 hours with a two-year-old. That is spirituality. I think that that sometimes does take time for people to just feel the spirituality. And for sure, cleaning toilets, like, that does not feel even remotely spiritual, not even half as spiritual as sitting and playing Legos. So I think that if you're struggling, don't feel bad. Listen again to what Malky just said and hear it again, that how the physicality really is deeply spiritual. And that's really our avaida as Yidden in this world, in a physical world. If Hashem didn't want us to deal with the physical, we wouldn't be in a physical world.
I do want to share that. I remember in seminary discussing with a few different people. It was a conversation that came up a lot, especially towards the end of the year, that there was like a sort of despondency that we're leaving seminary and we're never going to be fully again.
That went on for years. It wasn't just a discussion in seminary. So, like, we struggled even when we each had one or two kids.
So I have to say that I never believed that even then. Like, I do remember telling people, no, that makes no sense. People do not reach the climax of their spirituality at the age of 18.
That's okay, so not. Maybe Malky, you tethered us down, but the rest of us felt it.
Meaning I hadn't experienced yet, you know, what I was talking about before, that I do believe that any woman can feel this greater connection. I had not experienced that yet, no, but certainly not to the depth that I did as a woman with a household to run it, like having to be heavily involved in mundane tasks all the time. But I did believe it intellectually, because honestly, it does not make any sense that Hashem would structure our lives this way and also expect us to be holy and to connect to Him and to grow closer to Him if this wasn't a path to grow closer to Him. So did I have to learn to open myself to the experience 100%? But I think if we can at least agree with it on an intellectual level, then we'll allow ourselves to be open to the experience versus if you think in your head that this is holding me back from being holy, then it will hold you back from being holy because you won't be open to feeling the ruchnius of it. You have to know and accept and understand this is how I can be holy.
So that makes sense. So I think that that's your first step. Your first step is really to just understand it on an intellectual level and then try it. And then feel it, then it means something to you. And I think maybe that's the piece that people have to really, really connect to.
And like I said, the Rebbe speaks about this a lot. I feel like go back to the sources and, you know, the Rebbe spoke to us. He shared these messages with us so that we would be able to live our lives joyfully and feeling that Kedusha and feeling that everything we do on a mundane level is very meaningful.
But the doing does make us tired, right? So you're going through the whole process, right? So you're going through the end of Adar, the beginning of Nisan, the day of Erev Pesach, and you come to the Seder and you set this beautiful, beautiful, amazing Seder, and you sit down and you're exhausted. You're so tired. And then your kid needs to nurse and your older kids need attention. And the two, you know, middle schoolers are fighting over who's sitting next to mommy. What's your role at the Seder table? Like, aside for chief conflict resolution maker, like, what's your role in your exhaustion of just being?
I think it's that. It's just being without expectations of how it should look or, you know, my kids should be doing XYZ or should not. Should is a very destructive word. I think we should get it out of our vocabulary, because when you have expectations of how it's meant to be and it doesn't look quite like that, what you might have might be beautiful and wonderful, and your kids will have wonderful memories and wonderful experiences. But if it's not matching up to your expectations of how it should be, then it's not going to feel good. And when you get into that space of it shouldn't be this way, it's a terrible feeling. You work so hard, you work so long, you put so much into it. So I really feel like you said, just be. It is what it is. And it's okay. It's usually okay. You know, most circumstances are okay and fine. If you can just be and maintain that sense of calm, then it's okay. And it might take longer. It might not be as elaborate as you want. Wherever the fallout's going to be, if it's not in your mood and in the mood of your family, then you're doing great.
I love that. I also learned, this was something I learned after messing up at least once, that your kids don't actually remember all the conflict stuff that was happening between them. They don't remember the struggle that you were like, oh my gosh, that was the biggest stress. What they remember is what you put forth and they remember what you put forth in positivity. So with the songs that you sang, oh my gosh, remember the song that we sang? They don't remember the reason you sang that song was because they were almost about to kill each other. So you started a song. They just remember the funny song that you were like, oh, remember I sang this? They remember what you put forth. And I think that that's such an important lesson if you do get stressed that, like, my kids laugh at me because I make up funny songs. They don't know that every single time I make a funny song, it's because they're driving me absolutely crazy. And I have either I'm going to scream at them or I'm going to make a crazy song. And we have crazy songs. And one of my nieces was in the house, Erev Purim, and we were packing up Shel Chmanis, and suddenly I was singing this song. She's like, what are you doing? And my kids are like, oh, mommy always says that. But they think, haha, it's so funny. It's really like, it's just a way to deal with things. And really, that's the only thing they remember. They have no idea why I sing the songs. And I think that that's very important for us to understand that our kids don't actually remember the parts that are stressing us out. They're going to remember whatever we put forth and whatever we just either repeat or we focus on, or, you know, whatever the energy is really focused on. And I think that that's a very important lesson for us as well. So at the table, you have a bunch of kids. They all have to share their Haggadahs and they all have to share their things. Are there ways to get kids involved, both the little kids and the younger kids, equally, especially when you're sharing a table, maybe with cousins or with grandparents or even just kids of different ages?
One thing that we try to do a lot at our table, not just the Seder, but in general, is have discussion. In other words, not just share a Dvar Torah, but have discussion. You know what I noticed? Isn't that interesting that it says XYZ? Or like, oh, you know, this question just came to my mind. Or when a kid shares a Dvar Torah, to talk about it with them, to reflect back, maybe to ask a question, not so much to drive home any particular point, just that we're like, let's talk, let's share ideas. So the Seder in particular is, I very much see it that way, that it's a time of discussion, not exactly like, you know, let's pack in as many different tires as we can, but we all share together. And when you have it at, you know, a spread of ages around the table, whether it's your own children or guests, to just sort of like be cognizant of everybody sitting around and make sure you're sort of like touching all bases, which means also that everybody's going to be patient and we'll stop to sing the 2-year-old song. And then we'll say, okay, this question is for, you know, the 4-year-old and let that child answer it. And then they're fine when then you have a more adult conversation, let's say with the teenagers or the preteens or the actual adults. It's very almost organic, I guess, but organic with a lot of intention, where sort of making sure, kind of like a teacher in a classroom, you want to kind of sort of scan the room all the time and make sure that like you're just noticing everyone and hearing from everybody at whatever interval. It's sort of like that. Just keeping an eye on who's at the table, making sure we're, you know, hearing from everyone, that they're engaged in whatever way. And there could be side conversations going on too, you know, that's okay, especially if we tend to have a lot of people, like, you know, it's not a classroom, so everyone doesn't have to be sit quietly and listen. Just like some more again, more casual, but I do think discussion is very, very important. It's not just share something you learned with us. It's let's talk about it.
So I want to bring up one other scenario, which Malki, I'm sure you've had Pesachs like this, where you're maybe just right after a birth, or there's a really kvetchy kid who's not feeling well, and you spend half the Seder like in a bedroom with a kid. How do you connect to the Seder? Like, let's take our kids out of the equation. Let's just take our role as mother, right? You're the mother. You literally missed half of Maggid, at least, and you're just speeding through Maggid so you can serve and catch up to the family. How do you connect to what Pesach's really about if you're really not even at the table? You're not even being at the table.
Right. So one of my children actually was born Yud Aleph Nisan. I don't even think I sat at the table. I think I like laid on the couch next to the table at the Seder. It's a little fuzzy in my mind, to be honest. But I will say, I don't recall feeling like I missed it. It goes back to Hashem planned it this way. This is the structure that he gave us. So if I was immediately post-birth, and for me, post-birth means I am 100% out of commission. Like I told my mother before that baby was born, like I cannot peel a potato after I have a baby. Like I can do nothing, literally nothing. So it was not my typical Pesach at all. But no, I don't recall a sense of being left out, because that was the plan for me, that Pesach. And Pesach is, it's not just about the mechanics. The mechanics is generally how we get to the inner meaning of something. But that inner meaning is always there. And if due to whatever circumstances, your mechanics are going to be different, like that year, no, I did not sit at a Seder table at all, really. I lay reclined on the couch. So I did the reclining thing, actually, which reclined for however long I felt up to it. That's okay. This is the Seder for me. If you have a child that, you know, needs you, older, younger, whatever it is, then it might not feel like the, again, there goes the expectation. It might not feel like how it should be, but yes, for you, this is how it should be. This is how it is intended to be this year. And it's still Pesach. I think that is like the, just, it's so important, like to hold on to that. It's not about the trappings or the accoutrements or the way, I mean, again, often those are how we get to the inner intent, but it's still Pesach. It was still Pesach for me that year. It's still a season of rebirth. If anything, it was more a season of rebirth, you know, of achieving more of freedom. It is a time of chairos. I think I felt that, again, it's fuzzy, but I remember in my pregnancy, which was difficult, looking forward to hopefully by Pesach, I'm going to be done. I'm going to be at the Seder table and I'm going to have this new baby. And Baruch Hashem, that's what happened. And I think I felt a tremendous sense of freedom just because of that. That was the way Hashem wanted me to experience it that year. And I got like, I don't want to make it sound like this isn't a real struggle. I know it can be. But it's, like I said, I do believe it starts in an intellectual place of understanding and accepting that if these are the circumstances Hashem gave me, then this is how it's meant to be for me. And I can achieve, experience whatever it is that I'm meant to in these circumstances.
I love how the refrain in this conversation of Pesach is letting go of the expectations. Because in there, you're actually achieving freedom. And in the freedom is the whole idea of Pesach. So in letting go of the expectations of, oh, it should be, oh, it needs to be, oh, it has to, oh, we need to follow this in a certain way, we kind of achieve exactly what Pesach is all about.
Absolutely.
Let's go back a second. So Malki's the principal of a high school. And I think that every single year I hear mothers talk about how long Pesach vacation is, especially for their high schoolers. And what are they actually doing their entire Pesach vacation? Are they actually helping their mothers? Are they supposed to actually be helping their mothers? Why do kids have such a especially high school kids have such a long vacations? And where do parents find the balance of setting expectations, reachable expectations for their children versus overwhelming their children?
So first of all, I mean, just from a school perspective, we typically end closer to Pesach than many other high schools do. We usually end around Vav or Zion Nisan. A lot of schools end earlier. This year, because of the way Shabbos falls out, we're a little earlier than usual. But I do think like a week, 8 days, 9 days, 10 days, I do think that's a reasonable time for, you're talking about a teenage girl. Yeah, she should be home helping. And again, it's not just about helping you. It's also about she's going to do this herself one day. She should know how. She should be empowered. She should have the skills and the confidence to do Pesach on her own because she's practiced. But it's also, it's just, like I said, part of being a responsible adult. And, you know, it's okay. Kids don't have to like everything we tell them to do. Like they, you know, when they're little, they don't want to brush their teeth. One of my boys hates showering with a passion. I know when he grows up, he's going to be clean in Baruch Hashem, but it's because I make him shower now. And eventually he's going to integrate that into his hobbies and his skill set. And it's okay that he doesn't like when I tell him to shower now. He still has to do it. They don't like when you tell them to clean their room. They don't like when you tell them to do homework. It's okay. Like I do believe I see a lot. There's a lot of fear in parenting nowadays that we're afraid to tell our kids to do something they don't want to do. It's okay. That's our job. We need to communicate again calmly. I think calm is so, so important. Lovingly, firmly. We need to have a lot of patience because we might need to say the same things again and again and again and again. And that's normal. Kids are kids. But it's really okay to have, and necessary, I think, to have expectations of your children, especially your teenage children. I have teenage daughters as well. And they help a lot. They do. And I do also, you know, every mother has to figure this out. What's the rhythm of your household? But try to take their needs, their personalities into account. If you can say, would you rather do this or that? You know, that's great if you can do that. If you can say, different kids react to different things, but some children want to know, like, okay, what do you want me to do and when will I be done? So I need you to do A and B and that's it. Or for the next half hour, can you do X? Then you could take a break. Again, like for some kids, that's not so helpful. For some, it is. You kind of try to have to see what speaks to your children. So take them into account by all means. And obviously, Pesach should never be their burden. But they should be helping. They, again, both because they need to learn themselves to do this. They need these skills. Part of being a capable adult, and because they are in a family. They should be team players. This is, we should all arrive at Pesach, you know, feeling like we joined together and pulled off something amazing. That's why it's so gratifying that my kids need that chart, that Pesach cleaning chart, because they were taking ownership of the first step of the process. Like, Pesach is something we all do together. And that's an invaluable feeling for a family member to have, that we do this as a team.
I think that's such an important lesson. And I do think that I go into schools a lot and I speak to parents whenever I go into school. And I think that we've lost this part of it, honestly, like not to sound like, oh my gosh, you know, something's wrong with parents today. But I remember I was speaking to someone had called me, a parent, is not related to me going into school. Someone had called me and she said, oh, do you know anyone who can help me? She had three little kids and a teenager, you know, someone who could come by and help me. And I said, what do you mean? Don't you have like a teenage daughter? She's like, yeah, but she's on vacation. I can't ask her to do anything. And I was like, what do you mean? So you're going to hire someone else's teenager so your teenager could be hired by someone else? Like, I didn't get it. And I was like, am I missing something? Like, I have, my older kids are boys. They're not girls, but I would never like be okay with them not helping my boys cook, my boys clean, my boys do what they need to do. It's not related to their gender. It has to do with the fact, like you said, we all live in a home. I'm not the cleaning lady. They're not the cleaning lady. It's irrelevant whether we have a cleaning lady. We all enjoy the perks of living in our home. So we all help. I mean, like, aside for the life skill part, it's just, this is a home for all of us. And so you're not a guest in the home. We all help. So it was just a very interesting thing to me. And as I've gone to schools, I've kind of seen more and more of the same type of refrain of like, we're coddling our children. And in a very big way, like they can't fail and they can't, you know, the expectations can't be too high. And I don't know if maybe we've gone to the opposite end of where a generation ago maybe was, where, you know, we're more in tune with their mental health needs and we want to make sure that they're taken care of. But maybe we've gone too far. So just talking a little bit about the mental health needs, and I think you kind of touched on it, but not really. So I want to just give it a little bit more attention. What if your kid is having a really stressful year and they do need this break? This has to be some sort of break for them to reset so that they could go back into school and go back into the life that maybe is more stressful for them. Where do you find the balance of, yes, we're all a family. Yes, we all have to help. Yes, these are your expectations, but I'd like to give you a vacation.
Right. So when we say a kid is struggling, that's an extremely vague and broad title. I think that the idea is not so much to give your kid a vacation, it's to address the need that that child has. So your child is struggling with what? What's the struggle? Does he or she not feel accomplished? Are they having a hard time socially? Let's try to hone in on what the issue is. And then the vacation is not about a vacation. I mean, it's not about mindlessly doing nothing. It's about, is there any way we can try to fill that need? Or if for whatever reason that is impossible, that we can, you know, really like boost or build up another area to give them there in that area that will kind of spill over and sort of, for at least for now, cover up and like, you know, shove it under the rug, but will help them where they're lacking. So if, let's say, if a kid is having a hard time in school, let's just say like typical, like, you know, just struggling in school, academically, it's hard, it's a lot of work. I really don't think what they need is to do nothing. Certainly not for a week or 2 weeks. Maybe like, you know, the first day off of school, you want a day off, hang out, relax, no problem. Do they want to sleep in? You know, I think teenagehood, you know, that's the time. But sleep in until what time? If you're not feeling accomplished in school because you're struggling and you don't feel like this is the place where I can really shine, then honestly, Pesach cleaning is a great opportunity where give them a job they can do. Notice how well they do it. Reflect to them how well they did it. Point out that they worked hard on it. Telling them to do nothing, not giving them a chance to feel that sense of accomplishment to actually accomplish, you're not filling their need. So what they're lacking in terms of like, where is their mental health being challenged? It's every human being needs to feel accomplished. Give them that. And it could be in, you know, so many other areas. Find something that they can do and help them be successful at that. But it's not that they just need a break. It's that they need something specific and try to figure out what that thing is. Try to give it to them. The experience, just going back to this, of being part of a family, a lot of kids also need a sense of, for whatever reason, they might not be getting it in their social group or in their peer system. They might not be getting a sense of, I am solidly a part of a bigger unit. A family is a beautiful bigger unit to be a part of. And if they can feel that sense of, we all did this together, that provides tremendous security and just stability, internal stability that a kid needs to have. So again, it's not about vegging out and doing nothing. What can I give them? What opportunity, what circumstances can I create for them that will address the lack that they're feeling?
That's very interesting. It's like a very interesting flip on what I think people expect, which is to, instead of giving them nothing, you're giving them jobs that they can almost enter maybe a leadership position, or they can, you know, at least be like co-managing something and solidly feeling good about that. And that's a very interesting flip on, I think, what people might expect when we're talking about involving our children.
Or maybe they're good with little kids, you know, have them entertain, if you have little ones, have them entertain them for some time. Like most people, everybody can do something. Everybody has their thing where they'll really shine, notice it, appreciate it. Take the time to think about how they contributed and to express verbally how they contributed. And they need you to like write their story for them in those terms. You did X, Y, Z. And the impact of that is, you know, whatever it is. And what does that say about you as a person? What personality trait were you just expressing? They need to hear all those things.
That's so beautiful. So Malky, as we come to the end of our conversation here, I think there was so much positive things that every single mother, no matter what age and stage they're at, really, really can benefit from hearing. Whether your kids are really little, or whether you have older kids and younger kids, or whether you're just deep in the trenches of an early pregnancy where you're tired or whatever it is. I think that there were so many steps here along the road. And even if you don't have children and you are just a woman, what's our job as women as we're going into this Pesach season? And I'm not calling it a Yantif anymore. It's the whole Pesach season. There were so many gifts here in this conversation. If you had to leave our listeners with one thought about Pesach, what would that thought be?
I think that I feel that I've probably said this already, but this is my thought about Pesach, that we are so lucky. We are so lucky to have this Yom Tov, to have this season. The whole month of Nisan is a season to have this time, to have every season and every Hashem gives us. Particularly, honestly, since this war in Eretz Yisrael started, I have been feeling so strongly we are the luckiest people in the world, that Ashrenu, that we are Yidden, that we have a Torah that guides our life, that we have a calendar, that we can live this way, that we always have Hashem to turn to. And Pesach is one of those gifts. And if we can relate to it as a gift, then just imagine living through this month as if you're appreciating a gift, a beautiful gift that you've been given. Every day. It's a gift, and we are privileged that we have this time.
I love that. So during this time, as we focus on rebirth and as we focus on expressing parts of us in the physicality that's around us, in the freedom of connecting to Ruchnius in a way that's elevated, I really want to wish everyone a kasher and freilich and Pesach, a happy, healthy, connected Pesach, where we connect to all parts of our family unit and to our identity as Jewish women. And now we have with us Franziska from The Franziska Show, sharing with us her new music, Melody of Miriam. If you'd like to hear more about Franziska and the work that she's doing or her music, you can look her up on any popular music or podcast platform. Thank you for joining me on this past hour. I'm so glad that you found our podcast and that we got to spend the time together. If you would like to nominate yourself or someone you know for a topic that they are interested, feel passionate about, or you feel passionate about, reach out to us at info@bodiessouls.com. Remember, that's two S's. If you have any feedback about the work we're doing, or if you would like to connect, you can use the same email. I hope you have a wonderful, uplifting, and amazing day.